Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Andrew Hunneke. This week's guest is Washington Republican Congressman Dan Newhouse, who sits on both the House Ag and Appropriations Committees, and he joins us to talk tariffs, the Farm Bill, and staff cuts at USDA. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Supreme Court is allowing the Trump administration to continue with firing 16,000 probationary employees for now. The court ruled the nonprofits that filed the case did not have the legal standing to sue over the firing of federal employees. USDA still faces two other orders requiring it to rehire approximately 5,700 probationary employees that still remain in effect despite this decision. President Trump has paused the country-specific reciprocal tariffs on every country except China. According to the president, all other countries will see their tariff rates go back to the universal 10% rate. He said he made the decision because, quote, 75 other countries has reached out to the U.S. government for trade talks and had not retaliated in meaningful ways. Trump has said the main goals of these tariffs were to secure better market access and push companies to bring manufacturing operations back to the U.S. Meanwhile, the president raised reciprocal tariffs on China to 125%, saying in part, quote, at some point China will realize the days of ripping off the USA and other countries is no longer acceptable. China retaliated earlier in the week and increased the retaliatory tariff imposed on American imports to 84%, but that was before the president made his most recent announcement. The stock market surged in response to Trump's decision. The Dow was up by nearly 8%, its best day in 5 years. NASDAQ was up by more than 12% with its second best day on record. And the S&P 500 was up 9.5%, its best day since 2008. For now, it appears the 25% tariff on Mexico and Canada remains unchanged. A White House official told AgriPulse the 10% baseline tariff did not go into effect on those countries because their tariffs are based on concerns they are not doing enough to stop the flow of fentanyl and illegal migrants into the U.S. Meanwhile, the European Union has paused retaliatory tariffs of its own in response to the president's decision. The European Commission president said, quote, we want to give negotiations a chance, but if they are not satisfactory, countermeasures will be applied. Trump suggested there could be future exemptions to the reciprocal tariffs, but it remains to be seen what those would be or if he plans on re-implementing them once the 90-day period ends. Dan Newhouse is a member of the House Ag and Appropriations Committees. We asked him about his thoughts on the president's decision and if the tariffs could return at some point.
Absolutely. I'm very pleased to hear about the pause. I think that gives the president and these other countries that have been targeted opportunity and time, which is what, you know, very important to be able to work out a deal that's beneficial for both us and our trading partners. And certainly in the Pacific Northwest, it won't be too long. We'll be starting to harvest some of our specialty crops. I got to say, this is hopefully part of the strategy overall. I agree with leveling the playing field. We need that. We can compete with any country in the world with a level playing field. So obviously, a lot of work to be done with a lot of our trading partners to accomplish that. And so time is a good thing.
I would like to ask you about those China tariffs in particular. We know he did double down there, raising those reciprocal tariffs to 125%. And we know China's been a huge market for many farm commodities. Are you concerned we could be losing that market?
Well, certainly that's you're right. They have been historically a huge market for the United States. Many, many products, many from the state of Washington. China's a tough customer. And as United States, we have to rise up and be equally tough with them to make sure that we are treated fairly in their country. And that's not an easy thing. It truly is not. So, I think a large part of the focus of the president probably initially and originally in this effort was China. And so it's kind of interesting that we boil it down so quickly and focus on that country. So certainly I'm working with the White House to express our caution in areas where short-term impacts can be minimized, but certainly looking at in the long term of having a more fair level playing field as it relates to China.
We'll be back with more from Congressman Dan Newhouse right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who help build the America we depend on. and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson says he's concerned about the deep staff cuts USDA is making because he worries the department will lose crucial institutional knowledge. We asked Washington Congressman Dan Newhouse if farmers and rural Americans should be concerned about that.
Well, I think, you know, the USDA provides a lot of very important functions for the agricultural industry in our country. And I think farmers need to make their thoughts, their concerns known to their not only their members of Congress, through us to the administration. I think that's vitally important. I fully support the bottom line here is what we're trying to do is make the federal government leaner and meaner, you know, save taxpayer dollars and be as efficient as possible. And so that's a good thing. But I just want to make sure that to caution the administration, particularly as it relates to the agricultural industry, that there are important functions that we must preserve and make sure that they can operate as well as possible for our nation's ag producers.
We're expecting to see some cuts as well that the ag committees will have to make included in the upcoming budget bill. Chairman Thompson has insisted in the past that the House Ag Committee can make cuts to SNAP without reducing existing benefits in that program. Is that possible in your opinion?
I think it is. In conversations with Chairman Thompson, he is very intent on making sure that those people who need those benefits, that need the SNAP program, that those benefits are available to them. And so I think it's part of our responsibility to make sure that that program is run as efficiently as possible so that we can provide the necessary nutritional benefits for people that actually need them.
Leaders of both the House and Senate Ag Committees are talking about as well adding some parts of the Farm Bill into the budget reconciliation bill, namely more funding for commodity programs and crop insurance. What are your thoughts on that idea?
Well, mixed feelings about that, to tell you the truth. You'd love to see a lot of those things happen, but I think my bigger priority is to get the entire Farm Bill passed. And if we start taking it apart and pass bits and pieces of it, that takes away some of the incentive to get the entire package across the finish line. So I want to see that happen. It's past time. We've got a lot of challenges in agriculture that an up-to-date Farm Bill is absolutely necessary. And that should be our goal, is getting that done as quickly as possible.
I'd kind of like to piggyback off that a little bit, a two-parter here for you. This is your second stint now on the House Ag Committee. First part, how do you plan to use your prior experience to work with your Democratic colleagues to get a new bill passed? And then secondly, what are some of your farm bill priorities that you'd like to see included in the bill?
Agriculture is my life. You know, we're born and raised on a farm. We farm. My son is working very hard to keep the farm going in this generation. I think I can bring some real life experience to the committee, firsthand experiences to the challenges that our agricultural producers face. And I think that gives me a lot of credibility with folks on both sides of the aisle. I've got, you know, several priorities when it comes to the Farm Bill, certainly. I think that, interesting, we're talking about tariffs. I think opening up new markets is vitally important. And then another thing that gives us an edge in a very competitive world is the research that we have at important institutions like Washington State University. that truly provide farmers with the techniques and the expertise to be competitive. You know, we're not the lowest cost producer in the world, but we can be a very efficient producer with that necessary research. So we must make sure that continues in a strong way.
Congressman Dan Newhouse, thank you so much for making some time for us this morning.
Absolutely. Always happy to talk about agriculture.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion, but first, Lydia Johnson takes a look at U.S. reciprocal tariff rates in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
President Donald Trump issued a 90-day pause on most country-specific reciprocal tariffs announced last week. However, he substantially hiked levies applied to China. As you can see on this chart, countries' trade-weighted average tariff rate is compared to the U.S. reciprocal tariff applied by the president. The value is the average tariff paid based on the volume of products each country imports. Vietnam's 5% trade-weighted average is countered by a 46% reciprocal tariff, while Indonesia's 5.3% and South Africa's 5.8% are levied with 32% and 30% reciprocal tariffs, respectively. With the exception of China, all reciprocal tariffs are on hold for 90 days. China, as you can see, has the highest levies at a 125% reciprocal tariff. The country has a trade-weighted average of just 3%. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said the moves have spurred more than 75 countries to pursue negotiations with the U.S. to secure lower duties. He said China has failed to negotiate, leading to the U.S. increase in the reciprocal duties on the country. Even though most of the reciprocal tariffs are on pause, the president's 10% across-the-board tariff remains in effect. Read more in trade editor Oliver Ward's coverage on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line. Which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this week's panel discussion is going to focus on everything having to do with trade, tariffs, and even the Farm Bill. Joined this week by Ken Barbick with Invariant and Tim Lutz with the National Sorghum Producers. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today. And Tim, I wanted to start with you first, sir. President Trump announcing that 90-day pause on reciprocal tariffs to most countries, but he did double down on China, raising those reciprocal tariffs to 125%. How are sorghum growers going to be impacted by this trade war with China?
You know, it's a significant market for us. When we look over the last 10 years, China has taken 80 to 90% of our exports. And so about $1 billion trade annually for us. So certainly something that's very significant, but certainly went through negotiations and discussions in 2018. So this is not new for our industry, and something that nonetheless, the significance of the deal is really important as we look at what consumers need, as well as what is good for our growers here.
Ken, I'd like to bring you into the discussion now, sir. How is the uncertainty regarding all of these tariffs impacting farmers as well as companies in the food and ag industry?
You know, right now, obviously, folks, after this week, are glad to see, you know, a 90-day pause on a number of key markets. And then also, you know, the opportunity, I think, for the administration to negotiate some better deals in some of these places. You know, in agriculture, I think, you know, there's, you know, concern in terms of the tariff barriers, and there's concern in terms of, you know, some of the retaliation that may come in regard to some of the trade tensions. But there's a lot of countries that the president announced reciprocal tariffs on that impose barriers to trade for some of our agricultural exports that I think folks are eager to see this administration aggressively go after in regard to opening some of those markets. So I would say, you know, there's some cautious optimism right now, obviously waiting to see what the impact will be in regard to the China front and the retaliation that will ensue coming out of that market. But right now, I think trying to navigate some uncertainty with also the optimism that we're going to see some opportunity as well.
Tim, that is kind of something that the president alluded to. One of the main goals for these tariffs being to increase market access across the world and to fix global trade. Do you see that happening now with the announcement that happened for sorghum, and in which markets?
You know, I think it's a great opportunity for our trading partners around the world and our administration to sit down and take this time to work through some negotiations and open those opportunities up. One that our industry has really been focused on and spent a lot of time with the U.S. Grains Council in India over the last year and a half and working through processes there, has continued to see growth in their ethanol industry as well as their poultry sector. Certainly an opportunity that we believe is there for sorghum and one that we're focused on. Obviously other Asia markets and other markets around the world that when we look at what those opportunities are, I think there's opportunities to sit down and negotiate and to get to a place that could certainly be good. So we're, I think that cautiously optimistic is a strong statement in terms of what is possible to get done here in the next 90 days.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. A new farm bill not being complete is part of the uncertainty farmers are facing when it comes to tariffs. We asked Tim Lust with the National Sorghum Producers what some of their farm bill priorities are and their message to lawmakers trying to get the bill done.
Well, it's been a long process. We've been at this for a couple of years, and the clear need is more farm in the farm bill. And so for us, that really focuses on reference prices first and foremost, that underpinning of the safety net. Obviously, crop insurance and other things are important. So, you know, the exact process is still a little bit unclear about how they get there. But I think the commitment from leadership on the four corners and leadership in the House and the Senate, very appreciative of their commitment to try to find a path forward here in 2025 and get this done.
Ken, we know Republicans have talked about putting some aspects possibly of the farm bill into the budget reconciliation bill. What pieces of the farm bill could get put into that reconciliation bill? And then what stuff could get left out?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, under the rules that guide the reconciliation process through the Senate in particular, you can only include items in reconciliation that have a budgetary impact. The Congress is limited in terms of what changes can be made on, you know, legislative policy, statutory changes that don't have a money component. So you would see Title I with the commodity program certainly in play there, crop insurance certainly in play, SNAP, nutrition programs in play. We saw also, you know, the conservation programs and some other things that were included in the Democrats' reconciliation bill, the Inflation Reduction Act a couple of years ago. You know, I think there's certainly opportunity, and, you know, the committee leaders are looking at, you know, every kind of option at this point. But, you know, I think one of the messages that we've certainly brought to folks on the Hill is while we're eager to see things move, we really do need that full farm bill authorization that, you know, last occurred in 2018. There's so many policies, so many things outside of just the specific money titles in the Farm Bill that actually have significant impact across rural America and for agricultural producers.
I'd like both of your guys' thoughts on this final question. Tim, we'll start with you first, sir. Do you think the government will have to provide some kind of bailout for farmers this year due to this trade war with China and the president's other tariffs? How long can farmers wait for that?
You know, we're working through ECAP right now, and in our case, we have disaster assistance for the last couple of years that'll be coming out this summer over the next few months. So a little early to know exactly what that means, but I think just to say how fragile the farm economy is, we have to acknowledge that. And so while I don't have a direct answer there, I think we just have to realize how fragile things are on the farm right now and see what happens on trade deals, see what happens on farm bill timing.
Ken, your thoughts as well, sir?
Yeah, I think, to reiterate, it's a little early right now. We're starting to see some of, where the retaliation might go in regard to China, but in terms of other trade openings and whatnot, still early to say. I would say at this point, it's critical that we get those important folks into positions of leadership at the department. Stephen Vaden and Tyler Clarkson had their confirmation hearing this week. Trade was a huge source or a huge topic during that hearing. Both of those individuals I worked with in the first Trump term, they will be excellent resources and leaders as Secretary Rollins works on some of these topics. Luke Lindenberg, up for that trade undersecretary role. Richard Fordyce, undersecretary for FPAC. Also just super critical roles that need to be filled by the Senate expeditiously as we see, opportunities both on the export side and, anything that might happen in regard to, responses on the economic side for farmers. Really important to see those people get in place and support, the already, really strong team that Secretary Rollins has already over there at the department.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, Lydia Johnson has more on the U.S.'s top ag import sources in this week's Map It Out.
Almost 60% of all agricultural sales to the United States from 2020 to 2024 came from three countries: Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. As you can see on this chart, the top 25 agricultural import sources by value are marked in shades of green and tan. Mexico is the top exporter to the U.S., averaging over $41 billion annually. This includes supplying about one-third of U.S. horticultural product imports like vegetables, fruits, and alcoholic beverages. Canada was second, totaling $35 billion, which includes a large quantity of meat, vegetable oils, and baked goods. The European Union comes in third, averaging about $33 billion annually. The EU exports many high-value products like wine, spirits, and essential oils to the U.S. In February, President Trump issued a 25% tariff on both Mexico and Canada that remains in effect. However, goods entering the U.S. under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement remain subject to the deal's 0% tariff. About half of Mexico's exports to the U.S. alone fall under the USMCA. Energy and potash that fall outside the USMCA agreement remain subject to a 10% tariff. Experts say the tariffs imposed on the U.S.'s neighbors will increase food costs for Americans and squeeze farmers with higher input costs and more limited export markets. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than a billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for next week. Both chambers of Congress are out of session for the next 2 weeks for the Easter recess. and you can now sign up for this year's AgriPulse Food and Ag Issues Summit in Sacramento, California on June 10th. The event will offer a full day of speeches and panel discussions. Early bird rates are available through May 10th, and to sign up, visit the events tab on our website, agripulse.com. You can also visit our website for the latest on ag policy news and more. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.